Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr. As you've been hearing, Detroit has filed for bankruptcy. The city, the Silicon Valley of the Jazz Age, as my next guest put it, has finally done what many expected. It's acknowledged that it is at least $18 billion in debt. Mark Benelli is our guest. He wrote the 2012 book, Detroit City is the Place to Be, the Afterlife of an American Metropolis. He's also a contributing editor at Rolling Stone and Men's Journal. Welcome to WNYC, Mark.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I first want to ask our listeners, anybody with a Detroit connection, if you're from Detroit, call us with what you're making of this news. How does it make you feel about your city? Do you feel like this is the nadir and maybe you're going to be on the way up? Does this just feel like another thing to mourn about your city? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We want to hear from you if you are from Detroit and hear your stories. Now, Mark Benelli, you grew up in the suburbs of Detroit in St. Clair Shores.
Yes.
What was your first thought when you heard about this bankruptcy filing yesterday?
Well, I mean, depressingly, for somebody like me who's been following this story for a while, it was a question more of you know, when than if. So it wasn't a huge surprise to me. But still, when you hear the word bankruptcy, it's a grim, you know, it's pretty stark. That, you know, that said, people in the city, you know, last fall, the governor, the voters of Michigan actually voted to overturn this emergency manager law that had been passed by the governor, which would allow him to sort of appoint people, basically accountant, a sort of a cross between an accountant and a dictator, to sort of oversee.
What a mix.
So lots of Michigan cities have been troubled. And so, you know, you appoint these men or women to take over, and they basically supersede the power of the mayor and the city council. Last fall, Michigan voters voted through a ballot referendum to overturn this law. A few weeks later, the governor and the lame duck state legislature passed the law, a new version of the law. And subsequently, this spring, he appointed a guy named Kevin Orr to sort of run Detroit. Since that happened, I mean, the bankruptcy seems sort of inevitable. Orr has been trying to negotiate with creditors, the banks who Detroit owes money to, and also negotiating with the two big pensions, which is also a huge part of Detroit's debt. And, you know, it's been stalled. I mean, he was offering the creditors 10 cents on the dollar, which is, frankly, you know, more of a haircut than I expected him to try to sell. And I'm impressed by that. But that didn't seem to be taking.
So what does it mean for a city to declare bankruptcy? What is it? He was negotiating with creditors prior to bankruptcy. Now, what does it mean for the city of Detroit that it's declared bankruptcy?
The crazy thing is nobody really knows. I mean, no, there's never been a municipal bankruptcy of this magnitude. I mean, right now we can look to Stockton and San Bernardino in California, and they're kind of going through much smaller versions. Also, Jefferson County, Alabama, which I believe is something like $4 billion.
Used to be the biggest bankruptcy.
Yeah, Detroit.
It's much bigger.
Number one. So, you know, and you can see some of the stuff playing out in California in the courts right now. Similar things will be happening in Detroit. In Michigan, the pensions are protected by the state constitution. But Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, is arguing that as soon as this moves to a federal bankruptcy court, a judge can override that because federal law overrides state law. So that's what they're fighting over. They're doing the same thing in California right now with
that
the state.
That is interesting.
System.
So the state constitution in Michigan says you can't decrease somebody's promised pension. But
exactly.
They're saying once we move it to federal court, we might have a little more flexibility there.
Well, and this hasn't been reported as much, but the reason of the timing of the bankruptcy this week was because the two pension boards had filed a lawsuit to basically stop Orr and the governor from going into bankruptcy because they were saying that's against the Michigan Constitution. According to the pension board's lawyers, the governor tricked them, an emergency meeting was scheduled for yesterday with the judge. The governor said, can we just delay it by 5 or 10 minutes? In that interim, they declared bankruptcy. Now that bankruptcy has declared all lawsuits, against the city. There's a stay on all those lawsuits, so nothing can happen with that. So it's, yeah, it was an interesting sort of end run around
a meeting delay with broad consequences, yes. It sounds like. We're getting some calls. Leslie in Morristown, you are from Detroit. What do you make of the bankruptcy?
Hi, I'm Leslie. I'm from Detroit. And, you know, I went to great public schools when I was in Detroit, and that's just the one thing that I hope gets to come back. Detroit is such a beautiful city full of great people, and I hope that we don't lose that.
Mark, what does this mean for things like school budgets, this bankruptcy filing?
Again, it's not clear. I mean, one of the things, I was very critical of the appointment of an emergency manager because it seems to me fundamentally undemocratic for, you know, the governor to just appoint somebody who can, you know, have, whose power exceeds that of the mayor and the city council. That said, Orr has at least, you know, said that he's interested in investing money in city services. I mean, city services have been declining for years. I write about in the book, you know, firefighters who, whose firehouse has been condemned and they're actually sleeping in tents in an old Chrysler warehouse. I write about a police ride-along I did where, you know, the cop car didn't have GPS. They were actually unfolding like a physical map to while we were racing to a shooting. So, you know, I think the attitude of some Detroiters is things can't get much worse, and hopefully this will mean some reinvestment. It's hard to say what will happen, though. You know, when, for instance, Chrysler and General Motors went through managed bankruptcies, they also got huge cash infusions, right? They got something like $82 billion of federal money. That would be great if something like that was in the cards for Detroit, the city. I don't see that happening.
Is there any, you mentioned federal courts, any conversation about a federal role at this point in Detroit?
I think they've been pretty mum. I mean, there's a state a representative, not a state representative, he's a U.S. representative from the Flint area named Dan Kildee, and he's been petitioning the Fed to look at the way these municipal bankruptcies, not in Detroit, of course Detroit is the largest example, but there are lots of other examples throughout the country and lots of other cities that are sort of teetering the brink, how that will affect the broader U.S. economy. And he's saying, you know, the federal government should step in and do something to sort of staunch this bleeding. I'm not incredibly hopeful about that. The judge, you know, we're waiting to hear who the judge will be, and so a lot depends on this judge. The judge could go along with the plan that's been outlined by the emergency manager. The judge could rule completely against the pensions. The judge could decide that the pensions are completely protected. It's really hard to say how it's going to shake out.
And let's just again kind of there's been a lot of conversation about the decline of Detroit for many years now. But to set the table again, the city at its peak in 1950 had 1.8 million residents. Now it has about 700,000. This is a city that has the infrastructure for 1.5 million people and now has half of that in population. Of the other bankruptcies, municipal bankruptcies that you mentioned, some of them were, you know, infrastructure projects gone awry. Is there anything that we can look at of a city that's just fundamentally changed in terms of its economic base, its population base, and it has these long ago financial liabilities that its population can't support? Are there any other examples we can look to?
Not that I know of. I mean, yeah, you mentioned, you know, for instance, we were talking about Jefferson County, and that would, from what I remember, that was all about like a sewer deal or some sort of bond deal gone awry. So that was one very specific thing. With Detroit, it's these huge structural changes, kind of macroeconomic things that have been happening, you know, since the 50s, basically, starting with businesses and auto factories leaving the city proper, first for the suburbs, then for other states. Population, particularly white population, left after that. A lot of people sort of think that started with the 67 riots, but it was happening way back in the 50s, you know, ironically, partly because of the suburban sprawl that was being promoted by the auto industries who wanted people to have cars and go out to the green fields of the suburbs, right? And so this stuff has been, these forces have been in play for so long, the decline of U.S. manufacturing, deindustrialization, the sort of lack of an urban policy at a federal level. You know, cutting of state revenue sharing has been happening in Michigan since the 90s with cities. So even with a restructuring with this bankruptcy, it's hard to see, without fundamental changes, it's hard to see, you know, how Detroit will be viable.
Pat, in Brooklyn, you are from Detroit. You say you feel hopeful with this bankruptcy filing?
Well, it's, you know, I lived there up until 6 years ago when I moved to Brooklyn, and it just got more and more depressing over the course of time. And the saddest thing is when you drive down Woodward, these gorgeous, you know, brick houses are standing there and will continue to stand. Some of them are burned out shells, but, you know, it makes me hopeful that there's an end to the story, at the very least. And it even makes me optimistic of possibly going back and buying one of these old homes. You know, they just announced a streetcar up and down Woodward, which, you know, seems pretty cool compared to the things that were being brought into the city over the last 30 years of my life.
And Pat, what was the thing that made you decide to finally leave 6 years ago?
I was a musician in Detroit, and they're just, you know, as much as there's a wonderful music scene, I find that most musicians in Detroit end up going somewhere else. And you know, I wasn't part of the wonderful, like, rock scene, like the White Stripes and the Hamtramck bars and the more hardcore edges of Detroit were playing. So I don't know if my music belonged. I was kind of just in search of something else.
All right, Pat, thanks so much for your call. Mark, you write in your book about this, you know, there's so much that's been written about the decline of Detroit, the end of Detroit. It's interesting, the UK version of your book is actually called The Last Days of Detroit, whereas the American version is called Detroit City is the Place to Be, the Afterlife of an American Metropolis. So you write about how there's both this continuing slide and decline and just troubled finances, and then also a bit of a resurgence in terms of, you know, the Brooklynites who are moving to Detroit for the cheap real estate. How does all this mix in with the bankruptcy filing?
It's very complicated. I mean, like the last caller, I'm sort of somewhat tenaciously optimistic. It might be unjustified, but yeah, you know, as he mentioned, there's been lots of investment recently, especially in the sort of downtown, midtown core. The midtown area would be like the University District and the medical center, and they're building this the first public transportation that's not a bus system in Detroit in something like a century, which is a big deal. These downtown some of these downtown pre-war Art Deco buildings that have been, you know, vacant skyscrapers that were totally empty 4 years ago when I moved back to write the book are now being bought up, and, you know, businesses are moving back downtown again. It's the transformation of that sort of what I call the green zone in the book is kind of remarkable. And you also have these sort of hipster types moving in, and that's all important and it's exciting. The problem, the historic problem in Detroit has always been all the money pours into this central area of Detroit. The neighborhoods where most of the people live are kind of allowed to languish. And so you have the sort of skyrocketing crime, the terrible schools, and, you know, and people are leaving. If what's happening in that core can be spread throughout the city, That would be amazing. I think that would be an important part of you know, Detroit moving forward.
I wonder if we can talk about how this bankruptcy breaks down along racial lines. I mean, 80% of city residents are Black. Do you know about the pensioners in Detroit? Who is that going to hurt? Is that going to hurt an African-American city employee base if they lose, if their pensions are compromised because of this bankruptcy filing?
You know, I'm not sure the racial breakdown of the pensioners at this point, because there, from what I understand, there's something like 21,000 pensioners at the moment. There are only about 9,000 active city employees. So that's so out of whack. That's one of the reasons why it's just unsustainable. But a lot of these pensioners no longer live in Detroit. You know, they've left long ago. So they're not necessarily those numbers don't necessarily mirror the 80%. The 80% African-American number of the city population as a whole. I will say that race, you know, is a huge, huge factor in what happened in Detroit. I mean, you wouldn't see an American city of Detroit's significance be so, you know, thoroughly abandoned and just discarded if it was, you know, 80% white. I mean, it just wouldn't have happened. And there's been a real problem with regionalism in Detroit. Like, we're talking about the core city. If you include the surrounding suburbs, you know, depending on where you draw the line, that's, you know, 2 or 3 million people. And for years and years, there's been this kind of zero-sum battle in the whole region over resources and jobs. I mean, the same way that, you know, Rick Perry has been coming to New York and making ads to kind of steal New York jobs down and lure them to Texas. Suburbs in Michigan were trying to steal jobs from Detroit and vice versa. And it was just, there was no cooperation. And so it's been kind of madness for years. And a lot of that had to do with race. Some of that I think is breaking down now with the most recent census. The suburbs and the city both are much more diverse. People have been crossing lines much more. So that I think is also a reason for hope, but there's still a long way to go.
And what about the political leadership in Detroit? I mean, there's an emergency financial manager. Now there's federal courts that are going to be involved. What's the political leadership saying at this point, and how does that mix in with all of these racial dynamics?
That's pretty surreal because, you know, there's a mayoral race going on this year, and so these are basically people running for a job that doesn't exist. You know, Dave Bing is the current mayor, former basketball star. He was elected after Kwame Kilpatrick, who famously was led away in handcuffs. I spent a couple of days with him while he was still mayor, and I have some funny scenes with him in the book. But Bing was elected as sort of the anti-Kwame. You know, he was older and dignified and not a great speaker, didn't seem like somebody who could, like, trick the voters or, like, talk them into something. But he was not really an inspirational figure and was not a visionary, not the type of person we really needed at this point. So at the moment, there are about six or seven people running for mayor. The city council still exists, although I think it's a 9-person council and 4 of the people have left since the emergency manager was appointed because they really do have no power. It's a strange time.
Robert, you're calling us from Ann Arbor, Michigan. What do you make of the bankruptcy in Detroit?
Well, I mean, like most other people in Southeast Michigan, everybody knew it was going to happen at some point. Although, I'm kind of surprised, and it's sad that it happened so quickly. Then again, maybe it's better for the recovery. And Detroit, I mean, I was just in Detroit last Sunday, and I was downtown. There are a lot of big, grand old Art Deco skyscrapers from a long time ago. I feel like Detroit, downtown Detroit, would not have any problem attracting the financial industry or corporate headquarters, but the rest of Detroit, of course, would suffer in that case. And I was actually wondering, Anna, if I might ask your caller, if he has any impression about whether Detroit might be split up in the future as a result of this bankruptcy to make it easier for the city to pay its debts.
All right, Robert, thanks for your call. What about that? Is Detroit going to change, its footprint going to change as a result of this bankruptcy?
That's an interesting question. I mean, the way he phrased it made me think of, like, what they did after, you know, when GM and Chrysler, like, breaking off the bad debt. And I don't think they can do that in Detroit. There has been lots of talk about what they're calling right-sizing the city. That wouldn't actually shrink the physical footprint of the city. It would still be the same size. But Detroit, you know, as you said at the outset, it was a city of almost 2 million people. It's very spread out. It's not a city like New York with lots of sort of dense apartment buildings. It's more like single family homes, cars, driveways. So you've got, you know, neighborhoods that I write about in the book where there's one house left on a block, you know, and you stand there in the summer and the grass is coming up to your waist and you feel like you're in a field in Alabama somewhere. So the idea with this right-sizing plan was to sort of somehow incentivize people to move into sort of denser urban cores and make those the healthier parts of Detroit and then turn the other parts of Detroit into farms, parks, you know. Again, this is something you need money for, and it would be great if, you know, in this bankruptcy proceeding, you know, that plan is not ignored, because I think that would be a crucial thing to get going.
And that's my last question. Do you anticipate that this bankruptcy filing is going to be something that attracts investors to Detroit? They've finally done it. They're moving forward. They're going to deal with this debt, and we can start the next phase of Detroit? Or is it the city just declared bankruptcy? We're going to stay out of it until we see how this all unfolds.
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm not a municipal bankruptcy expert, but what I've been reading this morning and last night, I mean, it's all over the map predictions on how long this will even take. The governor and the emergency manager are hoping, I think optimistically, there'll just be a few months. Some people have said it could be 4 or 5 years. I mean, this is in the courts now. So I think a lot of it depends on that. I am hearing some people saying, though, that yes, they're eager to just have these old problems kind of wiped clean as much as a bankruptcy will do that. And, you know, and they're excited to move forward. And there is a lot of exciting possible investment in the city happening already. I mean, I just read early this week about an investor from Chicago who's interested in buying the Packard automobile plant, which has been closed for 50 years. And it's this really one of the most iconic ruins of Detroit. If you look on these sort of ruin websites, like that's one of the places that always pops up. This guy's talking about buying it and redeveloping it. So people, you know, Detroit is like New Orleans, I think, in a way. It's this place that is sort of so iconic and such a part of the national psyche that I think, you know, people want it to succeed, and it's and so that I think is another thing that's working in our favor.
All right. Mark Benelli is the author of Detroit City is the Place to Be, The Afterlife of an American Metropolis. He's also a contributing editor at Rolling Stone and Men's Journal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up, we're going to talk about how to be brave. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Laird.